Hi there, Scott McNulty here. Before the episode, I just wanted to remind you that now is the time of year when we talk about how you can support this podcast by becoming a member of The Incomparable. You can sign up for a monthly or annual pledge to support this podcast directly or other podcasts on the network. Here's what you do. Go to theincomparable.com/members and sign up. You'll then be asked to pick the shows on the network you'd like to support. If you check the checkbox for Random Trek, your entire contribution will come to me. Ha ha ha, filthy loot. After a few fees are taken out, if you listen to other podcasts on The Incomparable, check as many boxes as you want, and the contribution will be equally shared by all of the shows. As a special thank you for supporting us, members receive lots of extras. There's an exclusive bonus audio with a bootleg podcast where you can hear episodes of the shows right after they're recorded without having to wait for all that silly editing to happen, and a members-only community on Slack where you could talk to me. That may be a disincentive, actually. Since this is pledge season, many of the shows in the network will be posting bonus episodes just for members, of which we have done two. I did a chat with Jason Snell about the Orville, and I game mastered another adventure of the USS Incomparable as we play Star Trek Adventures. It was a lot of fun. There are contribution levels at $5 and $10 and $20 per month and annual equivalents. If you are already a member, it's easy to increase your pledge to a higher level and get some special goodies in return. So, if you'd like to support us, go to theincomparable.com/members to sign up. Thanks a lot. And now, here's the 200th episode. They said it couldn't be, well, mostly they said it shouldn't be done. But here's the 200th episode of Random Trek. To Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest, but that's not what I'm doing this time. I am answering listener questions, pew pew pew, because it is the 200th episode. So, if you don't want to hear me monologuing about all of my various opinions about Star Trek, skip this episode. I'll wait. Okay, the rest of you, here we go. The first question is from Bobby Perotti. And I should say apologies in advance for mispronouncing everyone's names. Thank you, Bobby, for your question, which is, the Orville is super fun. What don't you like about a show like TNG that doesn't take itself too seriously? So why don't I like the Orville? I did give it a few episodes and it just didn't click for me. It is not what I'm looking for in a TV show. I thought the mix of drama and kind of puerile humor just didn't work for me. That's not to say that I don't like puerile humor. I like it as much as the next guy. I will say, not particularly a fan of Seth MacFarlane's brand of humor. So that also didn't help. And I will say, I also don't really like Seth MacFarlane in as a character, as the captain of the Orville, which makes it difficult to enjoy the show. So that is my short and sweet reason why I don't like the Orville. I should say, if you like the Orville, more power to you. You shouldn't care what I think. Listen to it, you can listen to it. Close your eyes. Listen to the Orville. It's perfect. Continue to watch it. Continue to enjoy it. I say more science fiction is good for everybody. The Orville just isn't my cup of tea, and it will not be. Bobby also asked a non-Star Trek question. He asked, I see you're hitting the gym a lot. Tell us about your results. So this is, you know, it's not related to Star Trek at all, but it is kind of one of my kind of crowning personal achievements of the last couple of years, I decided after my mother passed away, I had gained a bunch of weight during the course of helping her in her final days through her cancer voyage. And I said, well, I need to lose this weight. And before, many years ago, I lost like 100 pounds doing a variety of like South Beach and exercising, and I just kind of fell off the bandwagon. So I decided I need to lose weight. And I signed up for Weight Watchers. They have a great app. I'm not getting paid, and they're not sponsors for this, but it worked for me. And that was, 2 years ago, maybe a little over 2 years ago. I'm doing Weight Watchers religiously since then, and I go to the gym 4 times a week. Running is what I do in the gym. So I'm up to, like, maybe 4 to 5 miles every 4 times a week, which seems to work well for me. And I have lost about 125 pounds and kept it off for a couple of years. So we will see. Those are my results. Your results may vary. Also, you know, I know some people don't like the stigma of weight loss and all of that. So I'm not telling you, you should lose weight. I made my own personal decision. Anyone's weight is your own deal, man. Don't let society tell you to feel bad about yourself. You're great the way you are. So there you go. Let's move on. Scott Higa asks, do you think the serialized nature of current television makes it more difficult to have standout episodes? I could easily think of my favorite TNG episodes. Most of them stand alone because of the episodic format. It's harder for me to come up with my favorite Discovery episodes because most of them all run together because the story is so serialized. The only Discovery episode that stands out is Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad, which is more episodic. Love the show. Well, I'm assuming that Love the Show was for Random Trek, not Star Trek Discovery. So thank you. And thank you for your question. I agree with you. I think it is harder for a kind of a highly serialized show to have standout episodes. But I do think the trade-off there is that if you're doing the serialized show thing right and you're telling a compelling story, it's much easier, although it's not easy, to tell a more compelling story over the number of episodes, which is why everybody's going to do this serialized format. I will say that, yes, the downside is standalone episodes are tougher to do. So I agree with you. Scott Grizzle wants to know, everyone asks Doctor Who fans who their favorite Doctor is. I sometimes ask people what their favorite captain or cast member is, but Scott would like to know, which is your favorite starship? And he also says, and this is a little, you know, he's keeping me on task here, you've got to be specific. And not just say Enterprise. If I just said Enterprise, I think that would be a cop-out. And I wouldn't even pick the Enterprise as my favorite starship. Anyway, so take that. I mean, I do love the Enterprise. Who doesn't? In all of its forms. But I do have a soft spot for the USS Excelsior. I've always enjoyed that look of the ship. And Captain Sulu gets it at the end, right? So that's always fun. I like the Excelsior-class starships. I think they look neat. So that would be my pick for my favorite starship, even though, what is it, in the movie Search for Spock, I guess, is that where it is? The big reveal of the Excelsior is it sputters out into space. But, you know, that's fine. They fixed it. It was sabotaged. Scotty sabotaged it, so that's not the Excelsior's fault. But I do like the way it looks. So there's where my Oh, and he had another question. How long until I start adding new shows like Discovery and Short Treks to the spreadsheet? I've already added them. They just haven't come up yet. So we'll see if Star Trek Discovery comes up sometime soon. Nathaniel Smith asks, what do you think of the original proposed ending to DS9 where Ira Stephen Bear wanted the entire series and the Star Trek to be the idea of writer Benny Russell, the character from The Far Beyond the Stars? Also, do you plan on adding Discovery episodes to Random Trek? I've already answered his second question. The first question is, I think that is a banana pants idea that I am not surprised Ira Stephen Bear had. I was lucky enough, thanks to a listener of Random Trek, to go to New York and see the premiere of that Which We Leave Behind, I think that's the name of it, is the DS9 documentary that he is working on. Or is it that? Oh, What We Left Behind is the name of it, which, by the way, is a fantastic movie. I enjoyed it. It was not what I was expecting. And I think that you will sooner rather than later be able to purchase it and see it yourself. So that's great. But anyway, watching that movie and seeing how Ira is as a person, it makes sense that he would want it to end that way. It also makes sense why the keepers of the franchise did not want it to end that way, because that kind of screws up everything. So there you go. Arlette asks, with so many species in the Federation, why are most of Starfleet personnel human? Is the replicator food so bad? Well, maybe. I don't know. I have so many thoughts about the replicator, because I wonder what do the food taste like? How do you get those recipes? How do you input it? Do you put in like a traditional recipe and then you punch it in and it makes it somehow? Or can you, here's my other question. Can I have like, so I'm on Weight Watchers, right? And I need to watch what I eat, but there are lots of things that I want to eat. So can I tell the replicator, oh, I want, an ice cream sundae that tastes exactly like an ice cream sundae, only it has no calories? Can I do that? Or better yet, it has all the nutritional value of, a bowl of fruit, but it tastes like an ice cream sundae. That would be awesome. But I think that the real kind of prosaic, sad answer to the question, why are there so many humans in Starfleet, is because Star Trek is a show. Most actors in the world are humans, and for budgetary reasons, it is easier to keep humans looking like humans and far cheaper than it is to have a wide variety of aliens crawling all over your TV show. So I think that's, the real kind of lame, sad answer. And that's also why many Star Trek aliens that we know and love are just humans with funny foreheads, because that's cheap. And the actors don't have to spend too much time in makeup. They could just put on some wacky ears or a little forehead bump. And there you go. You're a Romulan. Peter has a whole slew of questions, so I'm gonna do this like a lightning rounds style here. And say, let's see, Discovery was pitched as a modern Star Trek show for this era of cinematic TV, and Peter liked season one a lot, hasn't watched season two yet, so he has no opinion about that. This is a very low question. But as I recall, apart from one scene where some slightly awkward F-bombs and the frequently repeated sexy flashbacks between Laurel and Tyler, Discovery wouldn't have been much out of place on basic cable. Were these scenes in an abandoned attempt to make Star Trek more edgy, or do I think future Star Trek shows will dig in on adult content? I lament that those scenes mean that I can't share Discovery with my kids like my father could, which is sad, because watching new Star Trek with my dad shaped me into the person I am today, and countless scientists, engineers, and astronauts say the same thing. Is that old era of Star Trek for everybody past us? Does new Star Trek content even need to be safe for kids, or should kids and parents be happy to watch old TV together? I think that's an excellent question. And I think the answer is that, or at least I'm hopeful that the answer is there's a wide variety of Star Trek for all ages that will be produced. New Star Trek, I should say. I mean, the wonderful thing that you alluded to at the end of your answer is that any new Star Trek doesn't negate the old Star Trek. So you can continue to share all of the kid-friendly, hours and hours and hours of kid-friendly Star Trek content that exists currently. And I would say, I think Star Trek, the second season of Star Trek Discovery, dialed back a little bit on the edgy things. I think that was a remnant of Bryan Singer, who was the original showrunner, trying to, in fact, make Star Trek a little more edgy and be kind of part of this golden age of television where everything needs to have sex and violence, although Star Trek has always had sex and violence, but nudity and profanity in particular. So I think that was probably, I won't say it's a failed attempt, I will say, or misguided, because I think, I have nothing against either of those things, but I do understand that it makes it difficult for people to enjoy the show with their kids. So I think there'll be plenty of family-friendly Star Trek coming out from CBS All Access. And I think that hopefully, I wouldn't be opposed to the opposite, which is it seems like CBS is committed to making a whole variety of Star Trek. So why not a Star Trek that is just for the adults? So, ratchet it up a whole bunch of stuff. We have Game of Thrones, Star Trek Game of Thrones style, which would be interesting. Or, there are those rumors about the movie with what's his name, Quentin Tarantino. So I think that if that happens, that seems like it will not be kid friendly. All right, Peter has another question. The new, still unnamed future Picard series will be the furthest look into the canonical Star Trek timeline and Enterprise is still the earliest. Is there an era in Star Trek that strikes me as particularly interesting? If I were pitching a new series or movie, what era would I suggest? That is an excellent question. One that I have... Well, I wouldn't... So, I mean, nobody cares about what I want to see in Star Trek, and no one wants to hear my... No one, other than Peter, who's asking me, obviously. Thank you, Peter, for asking me. But when I say no one, I mean like TV people don't care about my opinions. Because I'm not a TV person, and I don't know how to run a TV show. But I will say that I would probably want to set my TV show that will never be made after the events of the movies, the Next Generation movies, and explore kind of the expanse and the future of Star Trek. Because I think, as much as I like Discovery, I don't think we need to keep going back into the past of Star Trek to examine that stuff. And also, just from a purely kind of selfish, I assume I would be writing some of this stuff in my show, which is also probably not a great decision on anyone's part. But I wouldn't want to be shackled by having to fit my stories within existing continuity. So placing it after all of that stuff means that I can change anything I want going back. And then I can still reference the stuff in the past. So it seems like the best of both worlds. Haha, that's a get what I did there. Anyway, so that's my answer. Not a great answer, but it's the one I have. Did I buy a disco shirt? I did. I have a couple of disco shirts. Because why not? Peter also wants to know that he thinks, or he wants me to know, that he thinks Star Trek belongs on TV, and that's where it shines best. But he is a fan of the J.J. Abrams movies, too. Will we see any new movies set in the Prime universe anytime soon? I don't think I'm the right person to ask this question, because I don't know. But I assume so. I think they made money. And like I said, I referenced the Quentin Tarantino movies, so that would be in the J.J. Abrams universe, I assume. But we'll find out. Who knows? That's not a satisfying answer, I know. But I don't have a crystal ball, man. I don't. Will Wagner wants to know, what do you think is the most Star Trek-y episode of Star Trek across all the series that I've seen? What's the least? Oh my goodness. This is a tough question. And this is when I think to myself, Scott, you should have read these questions before you started recording this. Well, I'll tell you, the episode that I think, when I think Star Trek, I think of The City on the Edge of Forever. Because I think that that is an original series episode. It involves some wacky, you know, science fiction conceit, time travel. Captain Kirk falls in love with someone immediately. It's a kind of a character study. They go to a different place that's familiar, but not that unfamiliar from a production standpoint. They go to back lots that, you know, Paramount already had, so or CBS, I suppose, or Desilu, I think, who produced the show. So it was within budget, and it features an impressive performance from a guest star. So that seems very Star Trek-y to me. Then there's the whole thing about, we can't change the timeline. Do we change the timeline? What's happening? All of that. So I think that's the most Star Trek-y episode that I can think of. The least Star Trek episode. Well, and so this is something that I was talking to Jason about when we were talking about the Orville. And some people say, well, you know, I don't think Star Trek Discovery is really Star Trek. And I know what they mean, but it is Star Trek. I mean, it is made by the company that creates Star Trek. It is canonically Star Trek. So I know you're asking, what episode to me feels the least like Star Trek? But every episode of Star Trek is, by its very nature, a Star Trek episode. So it's hard to pick one. But I will pick, I will say, so one of the things that I learned from doing 200 episodes of Random Trek is that my mind is very good at remembering the high points of Star Trek and the low points of Star Trek. And not so great at the middle points of Star Trek. So the least Star Trek-y episode I will give to TNG's Season 2 Shades of Grey, which is just a bad episode. It's a clip show as a finale, and I didn't like it at all. And that's what I say to that. Stupid Shades of Grey. Hope that answers your question, Will. TM Trains wants to know, what about your Star Trek fandom or opinions about shows has changed the most over this random trek through the episodes? That is an excellent question. I don't think this will surprise many people, but as I was watching Voyager, I did not care for Voyager, and so I stopped watching Voyager when it first came out. And rewatching a whole bunch of Voyager episodes makes me appreciate it and give it more credit than I gave it previously. And a large part due to Kate Mulgrew and her portrayal of Captain Janeway, who I think is a great captain. So sorry, Kate Mulgrew, because I didn't give you a fair take. So there you go. Nathan wants to know, does Scotty hand select the poor performers in engineering to accompany Kirk on away missions to ensure a high standard of quality engineering on the Enterprise? I say yes, because who, you know, Scotty, he's a clever man. He doubles the time he thinks he needs to do something so that when he does it in less time, he's thought of as a miracle worker. So, of course, he's going to, when Captain Kirk says, hey, I need somebody to take me down, take down on this super dangerous mission, Scotty's not going to say, hey, you should take our most talented engineer. He'll say, you should take our least talented engineer, which also, you know, by the standards of Starfleet, still a very talented engineer. So, you know, there's no qualms about being the least talented on the Enterprise, but still, there's a good chance this person's going to die. Maybe eaten by a plant, a pool of tar. Who knows what's going to happen down there? So you just got to be a prudent steward of your resources. Send the problematic person down with Captain Kirk. Terry and Sean both have a similar question in that Sean's question is, who would you pick in each of the main bridge engineering positions if you could select any character who has appeared in any episode of Star Trek, any series allowed? And Terry wants to know, if you were tasked to create the perfect starship crew, being able to choose anyone from any series or timeline, who would you choose and which ship would you put them on? So, I think that's an excellent question. I would, first off, let's pick the ship. I know I already said the USS Excelsior is my favorite ship, but that is not the starship I would pick. I would pick the Enterprise E, because that ship is pretty cool and it's fancy. And then who would I pick? I guess we could start with captains. Who would I pick as my captain? Captain Spock, maybe. I think that he makes a really good captain. And, you know, who else would you want leading your ship but Spock? I think Spock and Picard, it would be a toss-up, but I would pick Spock. And mostly because I'm not going to be on this crew, so who cares who the captain is. For his first officer, I think I would put Captain Picard is his first officer. I don't think Captain Picard would enjoy that, and he may get riled up, so he might refuse the commission. But I would see if he would do it. and if he wouldn't do it, I would pick who makes a good first officer. I would pick Kira Nerys as first officer because I think she's great, and she would whip that crew into shape. And I think she'd get along with Captain Spock. So in security, I mean, it's a toss-up between Worf and Odo. I would pick Worf only because he is enjoyable and he's a prickly pear and he makes me laugh. So Worf it is. And we need a science officer. We've already got Spock as our captain. We can't pick Spock. I think, once again, this is another captain that I would reach out to, and she'd probably say no, but Captain Janeway, I think, would make a great science officer. She'd probably say no, thank you, because I don't want to be a science officer. So I would then pick maybe Zefram Cochrane. He seems like he's very good at science. He probably would be unreliable and drunk most of the time, so he may not be the best pick. But I'm going to stick with it, just because I think that'd be funny. Navigation, we're going to go with Sulu. You got to go with Sulu. He is a great navigator, so he's there in charge of the con. Engineer, chief engineer, we are, I mean, Scotty seems like the obvious choice, but I've already picked Sulu. I don't want to get too incestuous with the original series. So you know what? I go with good old Reginald Barkley. I know that's an unusual pick, but I like Reg, and I feel like he's very smart. And certainly I would pick the Reg Barkley from the Voyager time than rather than the TNG time, just because I think he'd be better. He's a little more confident in his abilities. So what is it? Who else is that leave? Am I forgetting anything? You can't tell me. But we've got our science officer. We've got navigation. Oh, communications officer. Who would I want manning the communications on my starship? I think I would pick Dr. Phlox. I know he's a doctor, but he's also a good communicator, and I feel like he's empathetic. Which then leads me to, we actually need a doctor. I pick the emergency medical hologram, because the doctor from Voyager, because he's a delight, and he doesn't need to eat or sleep, so he can work all the time. So there you go. There's my weird crew who's on the Enterprise E. Past guest Jerry Canavan wants to know, what is my top hope for the Picard show, and conversely, what is my worst fear for the Picard show? Well, I suppose my worst fear, we'll start there, is that it is just a retreading of TNG, and they don't have anything interesting to say about Captain Picard and his life. I seem to think that that's probably unlikely. My greatest hope is that it's entertaining, and I enjoy it, and Patrick Stewart is still great as Captain Picard, and the other actors they bring on to surround him are equally as good. Dan Wersch, who I believe has been on the podcast and whose name I'm probably mispronouncing, I apologize, asks, what fictional world would you like to recreate in the holodeck? Well, I don't know if this question posits a world in which I have access to a holodeck. I suppose that is assumed, but I don't know if that means that I'm in the Star Trek universe, so I have access to a holodeck, or through some kind of machination, I have, in my current life, gotten access to a holodeck. If I am in my current life and I get access to a holodeck, I would recreate Star Trek, because why wouldn't you? If I am in the Star Trek universe, I would recreate, that's a tough one. Maybe I would go to Battlestar Galactica? I don't know. That seems interesting. For like 2 seconds, check it out, and then run away. I take that back. I would want to be on one of the ships of the Culture. Ian M. Banks is the Culture. I would try to recreate that. That would be kind of cool. Matthew Hunt wants to know, what's up with the Vulcans' hats in Star Trek IV? Well, I think Vulcans have interesting style choices. We see that in every variant of Vulcan that we see. They're just, you know, following their bliss, wearing wacky hats and doing the things Vulcans do. Dave Bacher, or Backer, I don't know, I can't pronounce people's names, I apologize, says the Star Wars versus Star Trek choice has been around for a long time. Well, in historical context, not really that long, but okay, in pop culture context, yes. Certainly, recently, and perhaps it has always been this way, Star Wars has eclipsed Star Trek in pop culture popularity. What do you think is the reason behind this? Is it purely a matter of marketing? Or is there something in the environment or characters of Star Wars that is more relatable? What could a Star Trek franchise do to be more relatable? Should becoming more popular be a goal for the franchise? Well, I'll answer the last thing first. Yes, because we live in a capitalist society, and in order for more Star Trek to appear, people need to pay for it, and the more people like it and pay for it, the more Star Trek you get. So they should want to expand their audience. I have pondered this question myself, the Star Trek versus Star Wars popularity thing, and I think it boils down to, and I don't know if I've come up with this theory, probably not, I probably read it somewhere else, but Star Wars is really the story of one person, Luke Skywalker, dealing with a bunch of stuff. So the first trilogy, or the original trilogy, is that, and everything else is built around that. And I feel like that appeals to people. The hero story, they repeat it over and over again with various heroes in place of Luke Skywalker throughout all of the Star Wars. And Star Trek is really less about one character and more about a team of people doing things collectively. And I think that that is something that appeals to some people, but not as much as the singular hero. If you look through all of our history of literature and movies and TV shows, I think the thing that you find time and time again is that we as a culture, and I'm talking of course of Western culture and American culture in particular, but I think this, I'm not an expert in American or Western culture, but I am less of an expert in other cultures, place a high regard on heroes, singular heroes. And I think that that is what Star Wars plays into. Star Trek does it less so. It is really talking about, this is what we can do as a group which appeals less to people, certainly less to Americans, where American culture is all about rugged individualism, and Star Trek is not really about that. So I think that could play a small part in it. Plus, for a long time, there was less Star Wars, so, you know, scarcity breeds kind of a fervent fandom, and so you flame those or fan those flames of fandom by having a couple of movies that people really like and then not really having much of anything else. And then now, of course, there is Star Wars everywhere, and we'll see how that impacts the overall popularity of the franchise. But I don't think that Star Wars is going to be in trouble of losing a whole lot of popularity anytime soon. David asks, I don't know why I said it like that, David, what couples had the best and worst on-screen chemistry? And he offers up two examples. Is Kes Neelix worse or Odo Nerys? Now, so the worst, I think, is Kes Neelix, without a doubt, because that's just creepy and I don't like Neelix. So there you go. I feel like Odo and Nerys had a nice relationship. It was rocky. It was a little wacky because they were trying to figure out how to do all of this, but I bought them. But I will say the best chemistry for me is Jadzia, Dax, and Worf. I think they had great chemistry together. Much more chemistry than Worf and Deanna Troi. So there you go. But that being said, Riker and Deanna Troi, while we never see them in the series in a relationship, of course they get married later in the movies, I feel like their relationship was always fun, too, and they had some good chemistry. Oh, and actually, I should say, there is also one other couple that I think has really good chemistry, Data and Geordi. Maybe they may have the best chemistry on screen. Frank A. Kruger wants to know, hey, Scott. He doesn't actually say, hey, Scott. I put that in there. Why do Federation ships have saucer sections? So they can have cool saucer section moments where they decouple the saucer section and it flies away, I suppose. I don't know. When they first designed the starships, they wanted them to look different, and they came up with the Enterprise with the saucer section and the nacelles, and they've been riffing on that original design for 50 years, and there's your answer. I don't know. They look cool. I think it's important, probably less of a thought when they were doing the original series, but it's important certainly now to have kind of an iconic particular design feel to your ships in science fiction so that people see it and they think, oh, that's a ship from The Expanse, or oh, that's a Battlestar Galactica ship, or oh, that's a Star Trek ship, or oh, that's a Star Wars ship. And I think that the saucer section is a pretty iconic detail of Federation starships. So that's why they have them. Dan, your friend and mine, Dan Morin, wants to know, Scott, what is the worst holodeck episode, and why is Leonardo da Vinci in it? And this is, of course, a throwback to the episode that a Voyager that Dan and I watched that featured Leonardo da Vinci in it. And I will say that that is a pretty bad holodeck episode. Leonardo da Vinci is in it because somebody thought it was a good idea. I don't know, man. That episode, Random Track 197 Concerning Flight is the episode of Voyager. Not great. Ann Johnson wants to know, if you could take up a role in any of the ships, what role would it be and which ship? Now, that's an interesting question. I feel like you should pick a ship that one of the series is set on, because then you can meet the characters that you like. So I would pick the Enterprise D. Even though I have said on numerous occasions that I wouldn't want to serve under Captain Picard, I wouldn't. I'd rather serve under Captain Janeway, but I want to meet more people on the Enterprise-D than I do on Voyager, so I'll go with the Enterprise-D. And my role would be, and I've said this before too, I'd like to think I'd be command, but I'm pretty sure I'd be operations. So I would probably be like some lieutenant commander in charge of like logistics or something, and it would be boring, and I'd do paperwork, and I'd solve people's process problems. There would be no B plots with me. If my character was somehow involved in a plot on Star Trek The Next Generation, it would be like the D plot. I'm pretty sure. Martha Woodard asks, if you could have any Star Trek character join you on an episode of Random Trek, ooh, who would it be, and what episode would you like them to watch? It doesn't have to be the show they appeared on. Well, that's interesting. So, taking this question at its face. It's the character and not the actor. So I would like to talk to Q, just because he's omnipotent and he knows everything. So I'd have many questions for him, and maybe he would tell me things that I would know. And it would have to be, he would only want to talk about an episode he showed up in. So even though we already covered it, I would have Q talk about All Good Things, because it's a Q episode. End of the series, he would be flattered. That would put him in a good mood, and then maybe he would tell me the secrets of the universe, or, you know, give me unlimited powers. John Potts wants to know, are you a fan of Discovery, and is it in the randomizer for inclusion in Random Trek? Yes, I've already answered that question. I mean, you didn't know that, so I don't know why I said it like that. But to answer the first part of your question, I am a fan of Discovery. In fact, I host a Flashcast with my pal, Jason Snell, called Vulcan Hello, where we, after watching an episode immediately, we talk about it. So check that out if you haven't been listening. The question leads me to believe that you haven't, because if you had, you would know that I am. So do it. Aaron wants to know, I'd like your take on the transporters. Aren't they really just death machines? Yes, they are. The way transporters work, one version of yourself goes in, dies, and is reconstituted. Another version of yourself is reconstituted elsewhere. I mean, this is proven because in numerous episodes of Star Trek, either duplicates are created or people are split. So the transporter can create and take life, and it does it every day. The Enterprise is full of corpses. Ooh. The final question is from Rajiv Varma. I'm sorry, I mispronounced your name. I apologize. Did you ever visit the Star Trek Experience exhibit in Las Vegas, Nevada, before it was dismantled? Funny story. So I'm not a fan of Las Vegas. I've been to Las Vegas a couple times. The first time I went to Las Vegas was a month after the Star Trek Experience exhibit closed. So I have never been there. I wanted to go, but I never made it happen. So c'est la vie. Stuart Matthews doesn't have a question. He has a song that he composed for me that I'd like to play right now. And here it is.
It's been a long time since Scott began Random Trek. He's watched a lot of shows. Some are great and some are drag. Each week a non-random guest would join him, reminiscing about Harry Kim. But I'm not gonna keep on singing the song, 'cause everybody hates it so much.
Thank you, Stuart, for making a version of Face of the Heart that I almost like. But actually, I do like it. I appreciate the effort you went through. Thank you very much. That's the end of our 200th episode of Random Trek. I just want to say thank you to everybody who listens to Random Trek. A special thank you to members who decide that they want a little bit of their membership money to support Random Trek. I very much thank you for enjoying this little podcast of mine. I honestly don't think anyone listens, and I'm always surprised when I get nice tweets or emails, or even when I get not so nice tweets and emails, which the nice far outweigh the not so nice. It really warms the cockles of my heart to know that people are enjoying what I'm doing, and it's not a giant waste of time, I guess, even though, you know, I enjoy having the conversation. So even if no one were listening, it wouldn't be a waste of time, but it would be less rewarding because it's meant to be listened. So thank you all for what you do. And here's to another 200 episodes of Random Trek. Oh, I don't know. I don't know if the universe is ready for that. Well, I guess we're going to find out, you and I.